The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day. Time now is 12:47. We'll go to 1:47. Just a reminder to members that no electronic equipment to be on during question period. And secondly, to direct all your questions and answers through the chair, please. The honourable member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, in late January, the regional economic coordinator for the southwestern region of our province retired. This position is one that requires full communication in both French and English and has been designated as a bilingual position in the past. However, when this position was posted, there was no mention of a requirement that successful candidates be bilingual. So my question to the Premier, has the government abandoned the requirement for this position to be occupied by a bilingual person?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. In fact, Mr. Speaker, he's quite right. It was posted. It was posted in error. That posting has been withdrawn, and it has been reposted as a bilingual position.
The Honourable Member for Clare on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to table a copy of that position. It says bilingualism will also be considered as an asset. So, Mr. Speaker, this job services two of the largest Acadian communities in the province. In order for the people of southwest Nova Scotia to be properly served, there needs to be a person that can communicate with the residents of the whole region. This needs to be clearly defined in the application process. Otherwise, this government is sending out mixed messages to the people of Clare and Argonne. So again, to the Premier, will the Premier clarify to the people of southwestern Nova Scotia that the position of regional economic coordinator will be filled by a bilingual candidate? Yeah.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to ask the Minister of Finance to respond. He's familiar with this particular position.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Monsieur le Président, je réponds à cette question en tant que ministre des Affaires acadiennes. Évidemment, c'est très important d'avoir quelqu'un dans cette position qui est bilingue, qui peut parler français. C'est pourquoi nous reconnaissons que c'était une erreur et nous espérons bien, comme tout le monde ici dans l'Assemblée, que celui qui va remplir la position va être bilingue. Mais il faut attendre jusqu'à ce que la concurrence soit terminée. Merci.
Merci. The honourable member for Clare on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the 2008 French Language Services Progress Report clearly states, and I quote, that the Department of Economic and Rural Development will continue to provide services in French in their Yarmouth field office. Mr. Speaker, the job posting refers to bilingualism as an asset. So clearly, Mr. Speaker, bilingualism is more than just an asset to the people of Clare and Argyle. It's a requirement. If the office is to serve the needs of the entire region, and the application must reflect this in plain language. So I will go to the minister responsible for Acadian Affairs. Will the minister commit to require that the successful candidate be able to fully communicate in both French and English?
The Honourable Minister responsible for Acadian Affairs.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Évidemment, nous reconnaissons que c'était une erreur d'avoir un tel poste qui n'a pas spécifié que ça doit être bilingue. Nous sommes confiants qu'avec le nouvel poste, que nous allons avoir des candidats qui peuvent être bilingues. Mais pour répondre à cette question, il faut attendre jusqu'à ce que la concurrence soit terminée avant de prendre des conclusions. Merci.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you. In English, so we can both understand. During the election campaign, the NDP party made seven commitments to the voters of Nova Scotia. Second of those stated, and I quote, we would keep emergency rooms open and reduce health care waits. So my question to the Premier is this a commitment that your government will actually keep?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the Honourable Member knows that we have just seen the interim report of Dr. John Ross, who was the expert in emergency medicine, who was hired in order to facilitate keeping that commitment. And of course, Mr. Speaker, we intend to pursue the commitment we made and to keep it, of course.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party in your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's true that at the press conference on April 8, 2010, when Dr. Ross released that preliminary report, he said, and I quote, am I going to recommend to the minister that we close any emergency departments in Nova Scotia? My short answer is no. So my question to the Premier, will he again repeat that he will accept Dr. Ross's commitment, no emergency room closures?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, of course, we hired Dr. Ross to do a job. He has taken it on with great enthusiasm. He's spoken with many of the district health authorities already. He's consulting with the stakeholders. Of course, we intend to accept his recommendations, and we're looking forward to his final report so that we can move on this very important file.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, in your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The election brochure, the statement by Dr. Ross, and the commitment from the Premier are clear. Emergency rooms will remain open. So will the Premier tell all Nova Scotians that all of the 35 communities where there currently are emergency rooms, that those people in those communities will continue to have 24/7 access to health care?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know the Honourable Member said brochure. I'm sure she means platform. Mr. Speaker, the intention of the government is, of course, to make sure that the province has the best emergency services possible. We intend to pursue exactly what we said over the course of the election campaign. We believe that the job that is being done by Dr. Ross will lead us to sustainable emergency care services right across the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Healthcare spending is expected to grow at 6% this year. That figure is clearly unsustainable. In one area of possible cost savings for the government is with the purchasing of drugs. In Western Canada, four provinces and three territories negotiate with drug companies as a bloc, saving millions of dollars for taxpayers. So my question to the Premier is, what steps have you taken with the leaders of the other Atlantic provinces to explore buying of bulk drugs?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it's a good question by the Leader of the Opposition. He should know that we have been in discussion with the other provinces. In fact, last fall we were, for the purposes of discussing how we can take advantage of any of these initiatives and to achieve any savings that may be able to be achieved by bulk purchases.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Some of the largest companies in Atlantic Canada, such as Bell Alliant, J.D. Irvine, and Michelin Tire, are joining forces so they can access generic drugs at a lower cost. In private business, this would be considered low-hanging fruit. In the Maritimes, when we buy generic drugs, we pay about 65% of the cost of the brand name equivalent. That's compared to roughly 50% paid by larger provinces with more buying power. So my question to the Premier, have you calculated the amount of money taxpayers could save by buying generic drugs in bulk?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, there are many things actually going on in this particular area of health costs. We have put together the Drug Management Policy Unit, which is pursuing many of the things that the Leader of the Opposition just mentioned, and I'm sure he's aware that there is what the pharmaceutical companies are referring to this year as the generic cliff, where many of the name brand pharmaceuticals now will start to come off of the brand list and will become generics, and we're looking very closely at how we take advantage of that to be able to recover as much of the savings as we can. Obviously that's important to the healthcare system as a whole, but it's all in very difficult financial times. It's incumbent upon us to take best advantage of it. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pharmacare is a cherished essential service in Nova Scotia. It is important that it is sustainable in the long term. Obviously, there's an opportunity for cost savings through the bulk buying, which can help sustain the service for those most vulnerable. So my question to the Premier, what direction have you given to the administrators of Pharmacare to explore bulk buying of generics in cooperation with other agencies, departments, or provincial governments?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to congratulate the Leader of the Opposition on a good question. I think that's three in a row. The reality is that we have. I'm not going to touch that one. It was a masterful question. Mr. Speaker, what we're intending to do is to ensure that there's a coordination through all of the various departments of government that provide pharmacare support, because there are different programs associated with different departments. So in fact, Mr. Speaker, what we want to do is look at how we bring all of those together to make sure that the programs themselves are running most efficiently as possible, and also how they go about purchasing or taking advantage of volume purchasing of generics and of brand-named drugs, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. During post-budget discussions, the Minister of Finance indicated a great deal of interest in addressing the high cost of generic drugs and the impact that these costs are having on our provincially funded pharmacare program. We in the Liberal caucus agree this issue needs to be addressed sooner rather than later. While the Minister of Finance expressed relief that the province of Nova Scotia is tackling this thorny issue first so others can learn from the experience, we believe Nova Scotians should be acting now. My question to the Minister of Health is, will the Minister of Health be addressing this issue now with a Made in Nova Scotia solution, or is she simply going to be content to wait for the results from the Ontario plan?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Premier indicated, we are pursuing a number of initiatives to ensure that Nova Scotians have affordable access to drugs. While we're watching what's occurring in Ontario, Mr. Speaker, we are certainly not sitting idly by. We have extended the current tariff agreement with our drug companies for the next 3 months while we are in negotiations with respect to a new tariff agreement, Mr. Speaker. And we anticipate that this tariff agreement will be one of the initiatives that will result in greater savings for Nova Scotians in the long run in terms of affordable drugs.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, to the Minister of Health, the lessons that we learned from Ontario may well be lessons that we want to avoid here in Nova Scotia. The early days in Ontario have proven to be fraught with acrimony and mistrust between government and pharmacists. Pharmacists in Nova Scotia don't want to be viewed as adversaries in this debate. They can and should be part of the solution when it comes to addressing the high cost of generic drugs. My question to the Minister is, has the Minister struck a committee of representatives from the Pharmacy Association to address the high cost of generic drugs?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, we are watching not only Ontario and learning from what is occurring there, but we've also have other provinces that are working very hard as well for their citizens in terms of getting access to affordable drugs. Ontario is only one. BC and Alberta also are doing some very interesting things. In the Atlantic region, I've had discussions with my counterparts, the ministers of health from all of the other Atlantic provinces, with respect to their approaches to this, Mr. Speaker. And we will continue to collaborate across jurisdiction to get the best deal possible for the residents of Nova Scotia who deserve to have access to affordable drugs.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And given that we currently have an extension of the tariff agreement that the Minister referred to, and that we know that it had originally expired March 31st, so the negotiations are now underway with pharmacists, and also that here in the Legislature we're looking at an expanded scope of practice for pharmacists, the time seems right now for us to tackle this issue of generic drug pricing as well, because they're really all wrapped in together. So my final question to the Minister is, what time frame has she given her staff when it comes to dealing with the cost of generic drugs in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, I can assure the Honourable Member that at the end of this process, Nova Scotians will have realized better access to more affordable drugs, and this will be a good deal as well for the taxpayers of the province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Premier. The province stated that it saved $600,000 by buying out its contract with Bay Ferries. The impact within the tourism sector has been severe, but we will only get to see the true impact as the tourism season goes on and we're truly to be able to assess it. While I welcome the investment in Southwest Nova Scotia, it is the tourism sector that has really been impacted the most. As I understand it, the NDP will be using this $600,000 fund for not only for Acadian Shores, but for Liverpool to Annapolis, and in other areas other than tourism, like agriculture, fisheries, and forestry. So I was wondering to the Premier, could he give the House a breakdown of the $600,000 and what sectors will be receiving and how much they'll be receiving under Team West?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think the member misunderstood what I had to say. What we said was that we were fortunate enough to be able to save some $600,000 as a result of the buyout of the penalty clause put in place by the previous government. That money would go to Team West, which he knows now is also going to co-lead the Team Southwest Nova Scotia group with the COA and federal officials, and that the membership of that organization would be made up cross-departmentally so that it wouldn't be made up simply of one department, and that all of those departments would have input into a strategy that would be designed to try and strengthen the region of Southwest Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Premier for that answer, but he really answered my second question before he actually heard it, which really was, he's reading minds here, Mr. Speaker, and I hope he learns more of that because he's going to help him out as Premier of this province. Mr. Speaker, the Yarmouth Vanguard stated on March 31st, 2010, that the $600,000 would go to support Team Southwest. and I'll table that, which is comprised of federal, provincial, and municipal community representatives. The release from the Premier's office has the funding going to Team West, but he still states the funding will be used by all three levels of government in a collaborative approach. So, in this manner, maybe he can elaborate on how that collaborative approach between Team West and Team Southwest will be happening.
The Honourable Premier.
Well, thank you very much to the member for the question. And Mr. Speaker, what he should know is, what the member should know is that we were advised that the federal government was going to go forward with Team Southwest Nova Scotia. We contacted them and we set up a meeting with them, I think it was a week ago last Monday, in Cornwallis for the purposes of putting together the terms of reference for what that committee was going to look like. It was agreed that we would be co-leaders of the initiative. I believe that the first meeting is actually going to take place on April 16th, and senior officials from ACOA will be actually traveling to Yarmouth for the purposes of having that first meeting. Of course, it'll be up to the committee to set the initiative and the direction that they want to move in. But I think it's a very healthy sign that all levels of government want to make sure that we're working together in strengthening the economy of Southwest Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, in the press release that was issued by the Premier's office on April 7th, the heading says, Province invests $200,000 to market Yarmouth and Acadian Shores, and it actually says it three more times within this press release. And it also says, during a meeting with the Yarmouth area municipal representatives, Premier Dexter announced the money will fund a marketing campaign to promote Yarmouth and Acadian Shores to the Atlantic Canada market. Is the funding announced for the Yarmouth and Acadian Shores area, are they just for the area, or are they for the other initiatives within the Department of Tourism that might affect Yarmouth and Acadian Shores? I'm just wondering, is $200 going to a Yarmouth and Acadian Shores as a group, or is it just going to be used wider on the Team West?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the intention is to focus the promotion on the maritime market for the areas that were identified in the press release. And in that regard, Mr. Speaker, we're working with Destination Southwest Nova Scotia for the purposes of ensuring that it meets their objectives and their needs as well.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. In the House last week, the Premier confirmed that taxpayers have been paying his Barrister Society fees since 2006. At that time, he committed to providing the House with the exact amount that the taxpayers spent on his fees. That was 1 week ago. So my question to the Premier, what was the exact amount of money that the taxpayers have shelled out for your Barrister Society fees?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe at the time that I committed to getting that information to the member opposite, I did bring it with me on Thursday and Friday, and I didn't get a chance to see him at that time, so I'll make sure he has it by the end of the day. It was in the order of, I think, $9,700, thereabouts. Mr. Speaker, it was allowances over 4 years, and I want to say, Mr. Speaker, that that money went to support a caseload in my office that provided legal services to many of my constituents, and I'm proud to have done that.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, he could have provided that information to the House. There are other members of the House who are interested in how much taxpayers have shelled out toward the bill that he provided to the province of Nova Scotia to pay for his legal fees. Last week, Mr. Speaker, the Premier also claimed, as he just did now, that the allowance, and I quote, that was one that was of great benefit to the people of my constituency. I assume by saying the fact that he's a lawyer, being an MLA, somehow that the people of Timberley Prospect have not been well served by their member. I would disagree with that. I think they have been. So I would dare say, as I look down the front bench of this and across there, that those that aren't lawyers have well served their constituents, I would dare say. So I would ask the Premier, did he perform $10,000 worth of legal work for the people of his constituency?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, we all come into this House of Assembly with different skill sets, with different abilities, with different intentions. And, you know, it was my intention when I came here to use the skills that I had, the opportunity I had to serve the people of my constituency. And I was fortunate because I happened to have a particular skill set that was of particular value to some people who were able to come through the doors of my constituency. And I didn't put a value on them, Mr. Speaker. I didn't bill them. I didn't keep hours. I just simply did the work because there were people there who were poor. There were seniors. Mr. Speaker, there were people who were lost in a system they didn't understand. And I provided the service for them that they required. And, Mr. Speaker, I think that that was an honorable pursuit.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, as I've had an opportunity to travel this province in many constituencies, as a matter of fact, in every constituency that's represented by a member of the Democratic Party, I would dare say that every one of those members have had people walk through their offices looking for the same advice, looking for help, had challenges, Mr. Speaker. The irony of it is, quite frankly, when the taxpayers were picking up the tab, it was worth roughly $3,500 a year for him to maintain his bar society fees. Now that it's come to light that we've been paying for it, the Premier now is only going to be a $250 lawyer. So I'm wondering, in some way, is that serving the people of his constituency better now than he was before, or worse? The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, he knows it was inappropriate to bill the taxpayers of Nova Scotia for his bar society fees because it has nothing to do with his job. His skill set can be well used. My question to the Premier is, will you reimburse taxpayers of Nova Scotia for this inappropriate expense?
Hear, hear.
The Honourable Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I said, we obviously disagree with this. I don't believe it's any way inappropriate, and I don't believe that the former ministers in the former government thought it was inappropriate for them to receive it either, Mr. Speaker. I think all the members here use the skills that they have to the best of their ability to be able to serve their constituents. The Leader of the Opposition is in a position where they receive the same benefits and allowances that the Cabinet Ministers do, as the Leader of the Opposition knows. So that's why it was extended to me by the former government, because I was in the position of being the Leader of the Opposition at the time. And the member pointed out that now that I was in the Premier's office, it was more difficult for me to do that kind of work in my office. And I actually agreed with that. So, Mr. Speaker, that's why I changed my status.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. The town of Pictou, one of the highest tax communities in our province, is faced with the difficult decision to shut down the ship Hector, a new sewage treatment plant that has to be built at a cost of $400,000 and maintained at a cost of $175,000 a year, has taken a large chunk out of the town's budget. While we can all agree that keeping raw sewage out of Pictou Harbour is an urgent measure, so is keeping the ship Hector afloat. My question to the Premier, has he or his minister been depicted to meet with the Town Council about how they can work together to keep this important tourist destination open this year?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I was in Pictou County just a short time ago. In fact, I had a number of meetings with the various municipal units. This was one of the issues that was raised while I was there. And to tell you the truth, I can't remember if it was specifically with the council at the time or with other people there. We're aware of it, but we're also aware, Mr. Speaker, that this was something that was taken on by the municipality. It was their responsibility to ensure that they were able to keep up with the costs associated with it. We are considering, there are other proposals out there, Mr. Speaker, with respect to this matter, and we're not ruling out being of assistance, but, Mr. Speaker, we have to ensure that we are doing it in a responsible fashion.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes and your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, through you again to the Premier. I know that last week members of the Tourism Department, along with Economic Development and ACOA officials, met with members of Pictou Council. My question to the Premier, have you been informed of the results of that meeting, and has anything been decided in the 6 days since the meeting?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, no, I'm not aware of that, but I'm happy to look into it for the member.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes and your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, my final question to the Premier. The MLA for Pictou West was quoted in the April 7th edition of the Pictou Advocate as saying, and I quote, "It hurts us if our most important tourist icon is closed," and I'll table that. I'm pleased to say I agree with the MLA. This is yet another blow to the tourism industry in our province. And this is just the beginning. With the actions of your government discouraging tourists from even considering a trip here, the people of Nova Scotia have no confidence that you can fix the problems of the tourism industry. Our caucus will continue to raise the issue of the ship Hector in this legislature until it is resolved. When will that be, Mr. Premier?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that question is one that will have to be resolved as a result of the appropriate conversations with the municipality and with the federal government. I mean, if there is to be a resolve there, it is going to be shared. It is certainly going to be shared more broadly than just with the province, Mr. Speaker. But I want the member to rest assured that we continue to invest in marketing Nova Scotia as a tourism destination, and we intend to, of course, continue to do that, recognizing the difficulties with the high Canadian dollar and with fuel costs. These are all things that, of course, affect the tourism market and have been, in fact, for many years.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health Promotion and Protection. As we're all aware, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia is too often ranked number one in Canada in the health areas that we don't want to aspire to, like the prevalence of cancer, type 2 diabetes, and heart disease. Recently, stakeholder organizations who work to promote health in our province have expressed concern about future government cuts, which the Finance Minister has alluded to. My question to the Minister is, will the Minister confirm whether there are any future plans to merge the Department of Health Promotion and Protection with the Department of Health?
The Honourable Minister of Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker and Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm very proud to be the Minister of Health as well as the Minister of Health Promotion and Protection. And I guess I would say to the Honourable Member, we know that we are in a process, in a new government, where we are examining all of our options, but I want to assure the Honourable Member that to pursue an option such as merging departments would not occur without a full discussion and consultation with important stakeholders, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Thank you. And Mr. Speaker, this question will be for the Minister of Finance. Well, the Minister of Finance has told us that he will find hundreds of millions of dollars in cuts to programs. He has failed to tell Nova Scotians where these cuts are going to be found. As the Minister of Finance can appreciate, the statements and musings with no plan attached can cause a great deal of concern in the community. My question for the Minister of Finance is the merging of the two departments, Health Promotion and Protection and Health, amongst the cost savings initiatives he will be advocating for as Minister of Finance?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll refer that to the Minister of Health.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, we in the Department of Health and in the Department of Health Promotion and Protection are very focused on providing not only services for people who are ill and have disease, but we're very much interested in pursuing better access to primary health care and preventative health care that will result in a lessening of chronic disease in our society. And Mr. Speaker, I find it very encouraging when officials from my two departments are in the room together with me to see just how collaborative their efforts are. And this, I think, is a good thing for for the people of the province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to hear the Minister say that she's proud of being Minister of both departments and that she certainly sees the value of health promotion. I simply want to today get a sense from her that there is a commitment to maintaining the two departments. I wanted to just quote from a 1997 Health Canada report which looked at the need for health promotion in Canada, and the quote says, "It appears that generally the public health/health promotion voice is weak, and the hospital and biomedical perspectives continue to dominate when the two are in the same department." So my final question to the Minister of Health Promotion and Protection is, as Minister of both departments, are you committed to ensuring health promotion and protection continues to stand alone as its own department to promote the health of Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to assure the Honourable Member that public health certainly has not suffered whatsoever under this government. If anything, it has been expanded. We're getting a new full-time epidemiologist, which is a long-standing area that needed to be addressed in the department. We're going to be getting an expert on dental health in the department. I foresee a very bright future for public health in the province of Nova Scotia under this government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Premier. It appears the Shubenacadie Canal is the next project to be abandoned by this NDP government. NDP, which I believe now stands for No Delivery on Promises. While both the federal and municipal governments had committed their share of the money for this project, the provincial government failed to hold up its end of the bargain. My question to the Premier, why does this government not value the Shubenacadie Canal project?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the member's question. And I know it came as a surprise both to the minister and certainly to myself, because the simple answer to the question was there was never an application made to the provincial government for funding.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And it's amazing that there was a member of their own government on the commission. It says so in this story, which I'm gladly table. They were there. They were at the table when all the questions were asked. They were there when the decisions were being made. And they were there when they knew what was going on. But now they decide they're not part of it. It appears that the history of this whole project, the economic spin-offs, the tourist revenue, and the standing commitments to this project by this government in deciding what project should happen for infrastructure have been going downhill very fast. Opening these locks, as the canal project would do, would generate construction dollars and economic opportunity in the form of even future boat tours. Of course, I forgot this government, when it comes to boats, they will suffer the same as the Hector and the Cat. My question to the Premier at this time, when our provincial economy could use a boost, why is the government turning its back on measures that would sustain and stimulate the local economy?
Thank you, member. The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the member actually misunderstands the story. There is a provincial appointee to the Shubenacadie Canal Commission, but if there is going to be an application made on behalf of the Commission, then it would have to come from the Board and be sanctioned by the Board. It would have to come to the Department and to be properly considered. Thank you, Mr. That's Speaker.
The Honourable Member of Cape Breton West and your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And there's some canals on that side that should be cleared as well.
Frankie?
The project could have been funded for less than 2% of the money put into purchasing land. While this government claims it is showing restraint, the budget continues to grow and land continues to be purchased. No wonder, Mr. Speaker, that Nova Scotians are confused and frustrated with the direction of this government. My final question to the Premier is this. Will your government commit today to funding the Shubenacadie Canal project, a project that makes job creation and economic growth in this province a priority? Just a simple yes or no. We don't need a dance.
The Honourable Premier.
See, Mr. Speaker, that was the problem with the previous government. They tried to give simple answers to more difficult questions. Mr. Speaker, There is a process. We have a process of looking at potential projects for funding. We do an analysis of it. We do it on the basis of applications. That is, Mr. Speaker, the way that this government operates. I'm not sure how the previous government operated, but we operate in a reasonable fashion, and we're certainly happy to receive an application from the Commission.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection. My question to the Minister is a simple one. Does the Minister agree that Lyme disease is a serious health concern?
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there have been 48 cases of Lyme disease identified in Nova Scotia since 2002, and certainly for people who contact Lyme disease, it is a serious matter.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if the Minister believes that Lyme disease is a serious health matter, why have they not approved the Y-Tex tickicide for the four-poster deer bait station as a viable component of the tick management plan for Admiral's Cove in Bedford?
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're very aware of the concern of residents in the Admiral's Cove area, and the Capital District Health Authority are working with that community with respect to their concerns.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I can tell you that the people who are working on this issue for HRM are very frustrated with the lack of response they've had from this government. In that neighbourhood, there are two people living on the same street. One is a young boy. He's going to have arthritis for the rest of his life. The other person is a man. He will have neurological complications for the rest of his life from Lyme disease. Of the 48 confirmed cases since 2002 in this province, a quarter of them were from last year alone. My question for the minister is, how many people have to become sick and suffer lifelong complications from Lyme disease before this minister takes action?
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, there are as well two other areas of the province where this has been identified as a concern: Gunning Cove in Shelburne County, as well as in Lunenburg County. And Mr. Speaker, the Department of Health Promotion and Protection works very closely with the Public Health Agency of Canada, who are conducting a monitoring process, particularly in the Lunenburg County area, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Just recently, the Minister of Finance announced he was going to go against the wishes of businesses and municipalities and most residents in Nova Scotia, 74%, according to a recent poll, and raise the HST. Now, the burden of this NDP tax hike will be borne by the middle class and the working poor, primarily, and municipalities will struggle, of course, and will have to recover much of these revenues as they don't get all of their HST back, and the main method they have is through increased property tax. So my question for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations, has either the member for Cape Breton Nova or the member from Cape Breton Centre talked to you about the negative impact the HST increase will have on the Cape Breton Regional Municipality?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We do recognize, of course, that there will be an impact, but this government is supporting municipalities. They receive 57.4 cents, 4% back of their HST. And in regards to the question, if I've spoken individually to the two members, I haven't, but I recognize that I will probably be asked a question regarding that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, it might interest the Minister to know, and perhaps it might interest those two members to know, that CVRM will take a hit of about $1.6 million on their budget this year as a result of this NDP tax hike. And the gap in HRM is going to be closer to $2 million. Up in Cumberland County, where we already have a problem between prices on either side of the border, there's going to be a hit there as well. And guess what? Not only are they going to be paying more for goods and services, but businesses and residents will pay more in property tax too. So, Mr. Speaker, my question is, since the other two members didn't talk to you about it, has the member from Cape Cumberland North spoken to you about the fact that working people from his community will probably pay higher property taxes as a result of the HST increase?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I feel that that's a speculation around increased taxes there. I have not had a discussion with the member regarding that, but that's just speculation. This government is flowing over $10 million to municipalities this year, alone with the cost-sharing things that are happening around the province. This government is supporting municipalities and will continue to do so.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I think some municipalities may have a different view on how much support they're getting from this government, since the only thing that they received in this budget that they weren't expecting was an increase in taxes and a hit on their bottom line. Even small municipalities, towns and villages, are going to take an average of a $25,000 hit, which may not seem like a lot somewhere like HRM or maybe even in CBRM, but in many of these small towns that may mean the difference between survival or not. And so my final question, Mr. Speaker, has the member from Guysborough Sheet Harbour, who has Canso in his riding and is already under significant pressures, has he spoken to you about the negative impact the HST increase will have on the town of Canso?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to recognize that the president of the UNSM has recognized that they did not get everything they wanted to get in the budget. But however, in a press release, he was pleased that the province is honouring our commitment to the terms of the Memorandum of Understanding signed in November 2007. I just want to repeat that this government is supporting our municipalities and we will continue to work with them. If any municipalities need to, for me to meet with them around any discussions of any hardships that they're having, I will be there to meet with them. And I would like to table this response from Clarence Prince.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, in March, the provinces of Manitoba and Saskatchewan made a concerted, collaborative effort to work together to develop new electricity transmission opportunities. So my question to the Minister, what specific actions has the Minister of Energy taken to work with Newfoundland and Labrador, PEI and New Brunswick in a similar fashion for Atlantic Canada?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. From my perspective as the Energy Minister and the opportunities I've had recently, particularly when it comes to regional issues, I want you to know that it's with some delight that I can tell you that from the interactions I've had with energy ministers, it's been a positive relationship. But at this time, I'd like to refer the question, if I may, to the Premier.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much. What I'd like the member opposite to know is that there has been an ongoing dialogue between myself, the Premier of New Brunswick, and the Premier of Newfoundland with respect to energy transmission, with respect to grid issues. We are pursuing actively the issue of connectivity between the provinces, and I'm hopeful that in the not too distant future we will have more to say on it of a more concrete nature.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your first supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And since the Minister of Energy obviously isn't defaulted to the Premier for his portfolio responsibility, I guess I'll go to the Premier. As the Premier knows, Nova Scotia's electricity transmission infrastructure is in need of upgrades, and a collaborative effort building on the Lower Churchill opportunity as well as Nova Scotia-based opportunities such as tidal and renewable projects for long-term economic and energy security is very important. So what I'd like to ask the Premier, and he's talked about discussions, what financial provisions have you made to invest and support the renewal of Nova Scotia's transmission infrastructure?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as the member may know, the transmission infrastructure in this province is privately owned. Mr. Speaker, we are, of course, active in the discussions that are taking place around what the grid is going to look like. But I would like to make this recommendation to the member, Mr. Speaker, if you don't mind. And that is that we have now for some time proposed to the federal government that there be investments in smart grid technology. And I know he goes to Ottawa occasionally and speaks to his colleagues there. And if he would be so kind as to remind them that investments in smart grid technology that will strengthen the transmission system in Atlantic Canada would be a welcome initiative for us. That would be of great help, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I just want to tell the Premier I have and will continue to go to Ottawa and do the work that he's supposed to do and won't do for Nova Scotians. That's why we've gone to Ottawa, to take on the task of representing the interests of Nova Scotians. And Mr. Speaker, we know that the energy security and infrastructure of this province is one that's very important, one that the province plays a very important role, one that the Premier should be making sure that his minister is playing a leadership role throughout Atlantic Canada. We saw the inaction of this government when it came to the New Brunswick Hydro and Quebec deal there, Mr. Speaker. So will the Premier commit this House to have his Minister of Energy convene a meeting of Atlantic Energy Ministers so he can move forward and build on some of the things that he has not done and maybe he can get his Minister to do?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Energy works diligently with respect to the issues that the member has outlined. But, Mr. Speaker, just a very short time ago, myself and the other Atlantic Canadian premiers actually went to Churchill Falls. We met in Churchill. We went and viewed the actual sites, Mr. Speaker. We had wide-ranging discussions about the necessity for strengthening the transmission grid. There are ongoing negotiations, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the member may not be satisfied, but one thing he cannot accuse us of on this file is inaction, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture, and that question is, what is your government's policy on drilling for oil and allowing seismic testing on George's Bank?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and welcome the question regarding George's Bank. as you know, that we're gathering information, and this particular government does the right thing. We go out and we make sure we have the appropriate information before we make the decision, and that decision will be done before June the 1st. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Georgia's Bank is one of the most unique and productive marine environments and fishing grounds in the world. When this minister and his party were in opposition, they criticized any drilling on Georgia's Bank. So my question is, why did you campaign last year to Nova Scotians that you would not drill on Georgia's Bank, only to back away from this promise now?
The order, order, please. The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker, and basically this particular question. One thing that this government does, we alluded to it earlier, is that we go out and get the right decision. We make the smart decision, Mr. Speaker, and there's a time frame that the Minister of Energy will make the appropriate decision, and that decision can be done before June the 1st, Mr. Speaker, and that's what we do. We do our homework here, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Order. The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, on October the 26th, 2009, in his response to the speech from the throne, the member for Eastern Shore said that something he would like to establish would be to, and I quote, protect the Georges Bank fisheries, unquote. As well, Mr. Speaker, when in opposition, the member for Shelburne asked the former government about his position on the moratorium on the bank. On April the 30th, 2008, the member for Shelburne had this question. What has changed in the past 9 years that would lead you to a different conclusion? And my question to the minister is, what has changed in the past 9 months that would lead you to a different conclusion?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And the member from Annapolis, Digby, asked what has changed. On June the 9th, there's a lot of change that took place. They elected a governor that's going to make the right decision, and I'm very familiar with the sensitivity around Georgia's Bank. Thank you very much for the question.
The order, the Honourable Member for Cumberland South.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through you, sir, my question will be to the Minister of Justice. In a recent meeting I had in Ottawa with the Minister of Public Safety, the Honourable Vic Taves, I raised many issues, one of which was the present federal correctional facilities in Spring Hill and the possible synergies between a provincial and federal institution if one were to be located there. Minister Taves expressed interest and believed there was a lot of merit to this possible partnership. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister is, if the Dexter NDP government's claim of fiscal restraint is a serious one, why would the minister not look at a long-term operational savings as was proposed for this location of a new facility for Spring Hill?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. The member raised the question to me some time earlier and about a possible relationship there and led me to believe that there was some type of analysis or research done on that very issue. Only through my discovery is that that did not occur. Mr. Speaker, we did look at how do we save money, and the best choice for Nova Scotians and for correctional services was to do a proper analysis of where a facility would go, what type of facility to build, and we're well under the way on that process, and we should have in the next few weeks or so an answer as to where the correctional facility would go.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to table an excerpt from Hansard dated March 30th, where the minister himself said, and I quote, in the examination that we got, it would be limited. That was in regards to the possibility of, I assume, savings or other possibilities of partnership. I asked the minister at the time, the last meeting today, if he would table for this House any documents or discussion they may have had with the federal government that would support his assertions here today. And also I'd like to ask him,
If you gave so much amount of due diligence to removing the facility of Cumberland, why did you not pay as much attention there, both in regards to savings and to the possibility of saving jobs there?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
I think that the member, Mr. Speaker, should really go back and read Hanser a little closer to see that any potential the examination of that facility was in regards to me going back to my staff based on a conversation I had with him that tried to lead me to believe that there's actually been some analysis done by his government in regards to that matter, only to find out within the Justice Department that there was absolutely no recorded record, no acknowledgement that anything between the previous administration and the federal government had occurred. In fact, the conversation I had with the member was that he had a conversation with somebody in Moncton and from the federal government, and I hear today that recently on their trip that they spent over $12,000 to go, which they could have done by telephone, found that they had some consultation with the government in regards to that matter.
Order, 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 the Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your final supplementary.
Bring out the travel bill.
You know,
bring out the travel bill.
Order, the Member for Cumberland South has the floor.
Where you guys have been.
You know, Mr. Speaker.
What about the baby minister? The baby
Mr. Speaker, in Cumberland County, NDP. In Cumberland County. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in Cumberland County. You know, now NDP means new definition of promise. Mr. Speaker, I listened to what the minister has had to say, and I'm aghast to hear the minister get up and say, Mr. Speaker, he's questioning my honesty and my integrity. I can tell you, Mr. Speaker.
Order, order. The time for oral question period has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.